HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 141, recorded live Thursday, December 4th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks coding for fun with Dan Fernandez and Brian Peake.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And in this very special episode of Hansel Minutes, we're talking to Dan Fernandez, my good buddy from Coding for Fun and from Channel 9, and Brian Peake. How's it going, guys?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
So you have taken Coding for Fun, it's sweeping the nation, and you have squeezed it and turned it into a book for fun and profit. Hopefully you're going to make piles of money on this thing.
Yeah, we're looking at tens and hundreds of dollars, potentially.
Tens of dollars, hundreds of dollars. Yeah,
I think
we might actually be able to get
high.
Like a Chipotle coupon out of this, some kind of a gift card. Writing a book does not make a lot of money.
No, correct.
So Dan, Coding for Fun is was a site on MSDN, and now it's more of a blog. When did this start? This was a couple years ago.
Yeah, so this was a couple years ago. Brian Keller and I started Coding for Fun. Duncan McKenzie used to have an article dedicated to Coding for Fun, and it really is, okay, we're .NET developers. What are the interesting ways that we can use our .NET skills to build interesting applications? So that would be things like, wow, could I actually hack World of Warcraft and make it such that I can input data in VB or C#? Or what could I do to actually borrow videos from YouTube by downloading them and converting them from Flash Video into MP4 and then, interfacing with iTunes, which is one of the projects in the book.
Oh, okay.
So it's fun, cool things that you can do, and the samples are all in VB and C# in the book. But that's really the thinking behind Coding for Fun. The site is, how do we do like the killer stuff, the things that you watch on YouTube, whether it's the Wiimote videos that are really popular, etc.
Mm-hmm. And this is not just for professional programmers, but this is for hobbyists, for anyone.
Right, exactly. It's people that have a passion for building fun, cool stuff, or interfacing with games, hardware, building cool utility or productivity applications, or even doing April Fool's Day pranks.
Now who do you pull from when as source material for the Coding for Fun blog? Will you take articles from anyone?
We do. We probably get, I'd say, 5 or 10 articles a year from people. I think the challenge is with a lot of people is they have the ideas, but their project's always sort of 50% complete, and they never get around to actually finishing the project and publishing an article about it. But yeah, we do take external authors as well as regular contributors like Brian Peake and Clint Rutkus, and you used to be one as well.
Yeah, I did. I did a bunch of them. We had a thing called Some Assembly Required. But I think that you just called out the point that I had trouble with, is that I could always get things to 50%. I mean, I'm looking at a laptop that is attached to a Roomba with a rubber band, and the Roomba I actually got from you out of storage, and it's about 50% there. You know, it goes forward and backwards, but there's just issues, and I haven't quite had the weekend or however long it's going to take to dedicate myself to finishing that thing. It's just so easy to get it to halfway.
Right, exactly.
Now, the book, though, the book are complete. These are all totally complete, you can build these yourself kind of projects.
Yeah, exactly. And the projects are available, they're open source. They're either on CodePlex or our book site, which is c4fbook.com.
C4F.
So you can just download, even if you didn't like the book, you can actually download the projects and play with them. And there's a good source there.
Okay. So what are some of the more difficult projects that you've got in the book?
Sure. So I'll talk about some of the ones that I've worked on, and then I'll let Brian Peake talk about some of the ones he had. So one of the ones I was working on is InnerTube, and it's the one where I explained earlier, I love YouTube. I want to be able to download videos, but not just download one at a time, because that's pretty easy, and there are tools. I actually want to download entire feeds of videos. Like, what are the top videos this week, top-rated videos? What are the most favorited videos? What are the most shared? Let me download all of those, and you know, the actual downloading of the stuff, we're using Link4XML to get the data, and then to actually download the videos, well, a YouTube video is, you know, about 10 megs, say, on average. But if you have three feeds and each of those has 25 videos, then you're downloading, you know, 750 megabytes onto your drive. So there's a number of things that we had to do using a utility called a smart thread pool to actually download those asynchronously. And download every single thumbnail image. And the behavior of the performance is actually different, where you want to use less threads for downloading the thumbnails because they're relatively small and you actually do a lot of context switching versus using more threads to download the videos. And even once you have 750 megabytes of those videos, those are flash videos, you need to convert them to WMV to play them, say, in Zune, and to iTunes, you need to convert them to MP4. So then you're converting another 750 megabytes of videos into, you know, 1.5 gigabytes of videos, and then deleting the other flash videos. And doing this all asynchronously in the background and being able to do it with really, really large files. And think about the threading with some of the fun challenges that we hit upon.
And this is just trying to do this whole thing one button simple.
Right, exactly. It's add a feed and then click download now. And obviously it does take some time, but once you download the flash video, we see if it's already there, so it doesn't re-download the video, and it checks kind of what part you are in the steps. So even if you do need to disconnect, it's sort of smart about restarting it again. It's not going to force you to download all those videos again.
Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't YouTube try to keep you from doing that? Doesn't that qualify as leeching, or, I don't know, not necessarily stealing. I mean, I guess watching a video is really no different than downloading it, but don't they have some authorization to prevent you from doing this?
Yeah, that was some of the other fun stuff is how do you work around the limitations? So it turns out if you actually go to a feed to download the flash video by itself, the URL, it doesn't actually work. What happens is you need an authentication token, and we talk about this in the book, how to do it, but literally we had to do a screen scrape of an HTML page, look where they're building the flash video in an object tag, and read in JavaScript variables in C#, just by doing some text parsing, read out that JavaScript authentication token, then that same URL to download the video will actually work as long as you pass in the token as well.
Okay, so you're really simulating the same interaction that happens when someone hits it with their browser.
Right, exactly.
Ah, very cool. Okay. And how long did that take you?
You know, I had probably a 50% version in 2004, and then I just started to go a little crazy on the features, and probably a couple of weeks, especially in terms of writing and some of the Visual Basic porting and some of the other stuff that didn't make it into the book just for length. But for example, one of the things we have, and it'll be available as a download, is how to use the Windows Scheduler. So that way you almost have like a TiVo. Rather than you needing to launch InnerTube and press a button, you can use the Windows Scheduler and actually schedule that application to run and to download the videos. So that way you'll have the videos. You know, you're about to get on a plane. You know, Scott's going to South Africa. Wouldn't it be great if he had all his favorite YouTube videos are automatically downloaded without him having to press the button?
That's cool. That's cool. Of course, after you go to all this work, they'll go and build this into like the Zune software or iTunes, and it'll just work automatically. But until then, I can have this delivered directly to my MP3 player just by running your stuff as a scheduled task and synchronizing when I sync my player.
Yeah, exactly. And we also show how iTunes actually has their own SDK, and you can automate iTunes within VB or C# code. You literally just add their COM object, and even in the iTunes SDK includes VB and C# samples. So we can show you, like, if you just wanted to have the application and know how to hack iTunes or automate iTunes, you can do that as well.
Rock on. Cool. So what kind of hardware did you work on, Brian?
There's two chapters that deal with the Wiimote. So one chapter allows you to build a Wiimote-controlled car, which you can drive around your house and annoy everybody. And a one with Johnny Chung Lee with his Wiimote whiteboard.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman with a word from our sponsor. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 AJAX applications with Web 1.0 components? You really can't. If you want to do the next generation web applications, you'll need next generation components. Just like the ones that our friends at Telerik have got, they're RAD controls for ASP.NET AJAX. It's a huge pack of web controls built on top of ASP.NET AJAX that'll add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. The new controls mirror the AJAX API from ASP.NET, so development is really straightforward. The client scripts are shared, so loading time is not a problem. If you just set a couple of properties, and you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor from ASP.NET AJAX Telerik loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the new RAD grid handles thousands of records in just milliseconds. But as always, it's best to try for yourself. So you can visit telerik.com/ASP.NET AJAX and download a trial. Thanks a lot. I know who Johnny Chung Lee is, but for those listeners that aren't aware of the godlike figure and the long shadow that Johnny Chung Lee casts on us all, who is Johnny Chung Lee?
Johnny Chung Lee is I think he's a master's student.
PhD.
Was he a PhD? Okay.
Yeah, and he's actually now a Microsoft employee.
No way.
Yes.
We hired Johnny Chung Lee?
Yes.
Oh, dude. Who does
he
work
for? Our applied sciences team. Talk about a win, huh?
Wow. Oh, dude. I did not know that.
Yes, true story.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
So anyway, he created a couple of videos, a couple of projects that used the Wiimote essentially backwards from the way it's supposed to be used. So Wiimote's got a little IR sensor on the front of it, which you point at your television, and there's that little bar that you sit on top of your TV, and it can kind of determine where the Wiimote is, you know, what direction it's pointing at the television set. And what he decided to do was to take the Wiimote and put that essentially on top of the television set and then move around IR LEDs. So his two examples of this is one is putting IR LEDs essentially on glasses with a piece of software running on the television so that when you move your head around, you're actually getting head tracking. So you can actually see the targets in his example on the screen move around as your head moves around, which gives this really interesting 3D perspective on what's happening on the screen.
Now, if I remember correctly, one of the things that he did was really creative was that he took the remote, he lashed it to the top of the screen, and he got an IR, he built an array of IR, like an IR emitter array, by going to Radio Shack and getting like, I don't remember what it was like 30 little IR deals.
Yep.
He made like a donut, stuck the Wiimote through it so that the IR array would shoot towards you, the person, reflect off of you, and then back into the Wiimote.
Yes, he did a almost like a it was a multi-touch without touch where you kind of have little reflectors on your fingers that would reflect that IR light being shined at you. So you can actually manipulate objects on the screen using your hands, kind of like a Minority Report style interface.
Yeah. So he did this by interfacing with the Wiimote, which speaks Bluetooth. How do you talk to a Wiimote?
Yeah, the Wiimote is an almost 100% compatible Bluetooth device. It doesn't support everything that Bluetooth does, so it's a little awkward to get connected to your PC sometimes. But the fact that it is Bluetooth does allow you to pair it with a PC. And I don't know, about a year and a half ago, I wrote a library called Wiimote Lib, which is up on CodePlex that allows you to use the Wiimote from any .NET application. So it's a little, you know, C# and VB source code that provides a pretty simple API, and it's an event-based API that will notify you anytime anything changes on the Wiimote, any state, and it works with all the extension controllers and the balance board, so you can use it to do some cool stuff like Johnny did.
Now, why is it almost? What's the trick? When you say almost compatible, that means, you know, totally incompatible. I mean, if it's 99% compatible, then it's 1% completely incompatible.
That is
what
correct.
What kind of issues
the
are people going to see when they mess with their
Well, like, if you have like a Bluetooth headset and you turn off your phone and turn off the headset and you turn everything back on, everything repairs nicely. The Wiimote doesn't support a mechanism like that. I mean, it's kind of part of Bluetooth, but it's not there in the Wiimote. There are also some other lower level type things where you should be able to ask the controller what things it supports and get back these HID reports and whatnot. And they're mostly complete, but it doesn't. They're not quite following the standard because the only thing the Wiimote ever needs to connect to is a Wii, and Nintendo controls both sides of that, so they don't really need to implement the standard fully. But enough reverse engineering work has been done such that we can get around those limitations and actually use it on a PC.
Pretty cool that they've got they at least use an open standard to the point where we could do something.
Absolutely, yep.
So what APIs are you using in your library? Are you kind of thunking into the Bluetooth stack, or what do you have to do if I want to set this up today?
It's actually it remains pretty much entirely outside of Bluetooth. After you pair the Wiimote to your PC, it'll show up as an HID compliant device, human interface device. Uh-huh. So using the HID APIs that are built into Windows, you can essentially enumerate through all the HID devices that are on the PC, find the one that is the Wiimote, and then you essentially open a file handle to it. And it's a matter of writing bytes to it and reading bytes from it asynchronously and converting those packets of data into something usable.
So you mean like when you say a file handle, you're saying that you're going and using the standard file open APIs, and you're saying, I think it's like .../....
Yep, it's use the create file to open a handle to it, and it's got a very, very long path name, which is the hardware ID according according to Windows.
Wow. And you've taken this all and encapsulated it in your SDK so that I don't have to think about that now.
The only thing, if you need to pair your Wiimote and create an instance of the object and call connect, and then you hook up one event, and that event gives you every bit of information about the Wiimote.
Wow. Now, how hard is that to think about? I know that I'm a person where X and Y makes a lot of sense, but then you start talking about pitch and yaw. What do I need to study and learn about in order to be able to effectively make the Wiimote let me use it in, like, Quake or something?
Not a whole lot. I mean, there are two important, well, actually, three important bits of data that come back to you every 100 times a second, essentially. There's the, if you have the IR camera turned on, it's the X and Y position of up to four IR LEDs that it sees. Mm-hmm. So that's just standard two-dimensional coordinates. You've got the accelerometer data, which is going to be a value between -1 and 1. That's not actually true, because you can actually, it's between -1 and 1 when only the Earth's gravity is acting upon it. But if you start to provide motion to it and throw it and move it around, you're accelerating it. And so the gravity becomes higher, and so you'll get higher values. But you're going to get, three numbers, an X, a Y, and a Z. So you can determine which way it's tilted, because if it's lying flat, the pitch will be 0. And as you tilt it up to a vertical position, the pitch will go from 0 to 1. And then as you move it around, you'll start to get higher values. And that way you can determine if it's being shook, the past tense of shake.
Right.
Shaken. not with a huge deal of accuracy, but you can, at least can figure out in which direction it's moving. Uh-huh. And the third bit that you get are just the state of the button. So, is the A button being held down, or is the D-pad, up being pressed down? So you're going to get float values back, integer values back, and Booleans back. So
now, there are two Wiimote projects. There's a remote control car and then a virtual Earth one?
No, there's the Wiimote car and the Johnny Lee, he actually wrote the chapter. It's his whiteboard.
Oh, really?
A third project that he did, which is up on his site, that allows you to take and modify a dry erase board marker. Mm-hmm. And put an IR LED in the end of it, and you shine a Wiimote and a projector at a screen. Mm-hmm. And then your marker has a little LED on it. As you push the button, it turns the IR LED on, and the Wiimote can then track where it is on the screen. And at the same time, the PC is projecting the image onto that screen, so you can, mm-hmm. Paint on the screen or click buttons, move the mouse cursor, etc.
Wow. Now, how practical are these things? I mean, they're fun, and I watch them on YouTube, and I think this is amazing. But is this to the point where somebody who's listening could go and build one of these and suddenly change the way they work at their, maybe they have a software company and they really want a whiteboard, but they don't want to spend $10,000 for it?
A couple of people that have taken Johnny's base idea and his original source code and turned them into pretty fully functional Wiimote whiteboards, electronic whiteboards. People expanded it to use multiple Wiimotes, so in case you wind up standing in front of it and blocking the camera, a second or third or fourth Wiimote will pick up the slack and determine, you know, where things are on screen and keep it all in sync.
Mm-hmm.
Left, right, middle button, mouse clicking, special software for I've seen some amazing things. There's one Boon Jin is his name, created something called the Wiimote Smooth Board,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the better implementations of the whiteboard, and he actually contributed a bit to the book with his smoothing algorithms and whatnot, so you actually get nice, beautiful curves as you're drawing with your IR light pen. And I want a friend of mine, and I'm trying to remember what college he is at, but they actually took this and integrated it with a piece of software they have for doing mind mapping, you know, or mm-hmm. you can kind of create flow charts and link ideas together and whatnot. So as you're standing in a meeting, as people are throwing out ideas, you can write them up on the board and connect them in ways using this, you know, as an electronic whiteboard so the whole audience can see it at once and you're actually interacting with the stuff on the screen.
Very cool. And all of the source is in the book. What else? What is in the book that someone would get that they couldn't find on the web?
There's a number of projects that that aren't on Coding for Fun now,
okay.
and don't have the how-tos. Like InnerTube's a good example. Another one we had done, which was PeerCast, which uh-huh. is using a Windows protocol called Peer Name Resolution Protocol (PNRP).
Uh-huh.
And what it allows you to do is actually join an ad hoc peer network, almost like a custom mesh, if you will, and exchange information. So, like, you want to be able to stream videos that you recorded on your Windows Media Center, you mm-hmm. install PeerCast on there, and then you, from anywhere in the world, can connect up on the internet, assuming you have a network that supports PNRP, which is probably the big part,
mm-hmm.
and actually watch your videos anywhere in the world.
Very cool. Very cool.
And this is through firewalls because that's one of the things that PNRP supports.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Other ones are, we have probably a less sophisticated one, but it's using Popfly and building a 2D game. It turns uh-huh. out Lego has this software called Lego Digital Designer. And what it allows you to do is actually build custom Lego models. And you can then export them as images. And we actually use... build Silverlight characters in Popfly and build a 2D game where you're actually sort of battling underground facilities to destroy an evil scientist.
Nice.
Exactly. So a number of the projects, the only way to get the contacts is with the book. And even then, the other ones, like I'd say Johnny's... there's a number of different updates, and we know the source code works, and drawings and explanations of not only how the code works, but how to set up the project. And a number of them, the ones Brian's have done, are step-by-step. So if you've never, say, built an X&A game, it actually shows you step-by-step for building your first X&A game.
Now, X&A, of course, is the graphics library for the Xbox, right?
It's for PC, Xbox, and Zune at the moment.
And Zune. Okay, cool.
Yep.
And that's in the book.
It is. So the game is just, it's a simple little two-dimensional Space Invaders clone, because it's a game that probably everyone recognizes, but takes you step-by-step on how to build the entire game, you know, manage game state, manage your title screen, manage input, sound, graphics, explosions, collision detection, all the way from beginning to end to create this simple little game that runs on PC, 360, and Zune with all the graphics and sound files and everything you need in order to get started.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, what are a couple of other projects that you guys didn't work on personally but that are still in the book?
There's Twitter Vote.
Twitter Vote.
That was one.
Yeah, I think we all contributed to that one.
But, yeah, we did it in some way, but that's the one that was Clint Rutkus had started.
Uh-huh.
His primary project there, which is a voting system for Twitter, where you can use Twitter to pose a question to everyone that's listening to you, and then they can reply back to you their answers to the poll that you've asked them. For example, like, what's your favorite video game console? And you can give the options of Wii, PlayStation 3, or Xbox 360.
Yeah.
And then everyone that's watching you on Twitter can reply back with their answer, and we use... PopFly to create a nice, pretty Silverlight graph that displays the results anytime you want to view them.
Cool.
And we actually use that in our coding for fun session at PDC.
Which can be downloaded, right? I think that was TL39?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Scott won the poll there, too.
Unfortunately, he did.
I actually stacked the poll. I think I voted for myself like 20 times. Cool. All right. Well, you can get the book at tinyurl.com/codingforfunbook. And you said it's c4fbook.com for more details?
Correct. Yep, that's the website.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Dan Fernandez and Brian Peek, for talking to me about Coding for Fun today.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
All right. This has been another episode of Cancel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.